The show that's focused on investing strategies for today's needs and tomorrow's goals. This is Bucket Strategy Investing, presented by the Wealth Advisors at Lucia Capital Group. Now, here are Johnny Dean and Rick the Professor Plum.
Yeah, welcome back to the program. Hour number two has arrived, and I guess I mean that literally because it's the second hour of the very first show of 2016. So we welcome you back with more of the best in money information. The program's called Bucket Strategy Investing, and we're here for you. We're ready to take your phone calls with me, Johnny Dean, and Professor Rick Plum, who is back with me from Lucia Capital Group. Answers to more of your money questions. Those are all just ahead. And of course, right now, you've got the opportunity to get in touch with us right here on the program to ask your money question. Now, we do have some lines open right now. In fact, they're all open right now. So give us a call with those questions, 877-PLANNER. You got a question, a comment, whatever it is, anything that you've heard on the show, 877-752-6637. You can also get in touch with us via the email system. How do you do that, you ask? Well, easy. Go to wealthed.com, our website. Click on the Find Your Answer link near the top of the page. We'll get your emails right here in the studio and read and answer them on the air. What could be better than that, huh? Well, a lot of things, but we try. What we do try to do on this program is give you the best in money information. I would call it important wealth education. And of course, there's more. You can get in touch with the Brain Trust both on and off the air. Either way you want to do it, if you want to set up a face-to-face meeting with an advisor, or if you want to schedule an appointment, or if you just have a money question that needs to be answered, whatever it is, you can call Professor Plum or any of the advisors they got on hand at Lucia Capital Group, the Brain Trust we call them. 800-644-1150 is the number off the air, 800-644-1150. Your individual goals, your individual needs require a financial plan that is uniquely tailored to those goals and needs. That's to you. Again, the number, 800-644-1150. That's off the air. On the air, I encourage you to give us a call, 877-PLANNER. I mentioned we do have lines open right now, 877-752-6637. We'll talk about anything that you have, any money issue that's on your mind right now. So I went over some of these numbers for our TV audience last hour. I'll bring them up again here for everybody. It's good to look at these things. Now that everything has been locked in, Professor Plum, for 2015, as we look back, and I got all these from By the Numbers, BTN Research, and I appreciate them doing this for me and sending it along because it is a lot of work. The S&P 500, they found, was positive on a total return basis during 6 of 12 months in calendar year 2015. Overall, it gained just 1.4% for the year. So we saw some volatility. Half the time, it was positive on a total return. Half the time, it was negative. Now, the raw index, that is without dividends being reinvested, or ex-dividend, if you want to call it that, it actually dropped 0.7% during 2015, and it was just the impact of those reinvested dividends that got us up over into positive territory.
Which goes to show what the reinvested dividends can do for you, and that was in a fairly benign year. I mean,
it didn't do
much for the year. It was fairly flat. Okay. It was flat if we look at January 1st and December 31st. It wasn't flat if we looked at it anywhere in between.
No.
It was all over the map. And this goes to show that these stock market indicators, you know, the projectors, the things that are that used to make sense of it. Make sense of the market? I don't think so. You know, as January goes, so goes the year. We were looking last January, the S&P 500 index, just the raw index, was down 3%. And so we were looking for, you know, people that use those as an indicator, a horrible year. But then February, March, April, May, June were pretty good months. And everybody's like, January. And then they August, September,
yeah,
horrible. October, November, good. December, pretty bad. And so,
well, you know, this
it's hard to predict.
It is. It was as hard as impossible to predict with any accuracy. You could get lucky. But, okay, more on this here. If you want a few more numbers, I'm going to give them to you. For 2015, looking back, 142 of the 500 individual stocks, all right, so it's about 28% of the stocks in the S&P 500, gained at least 10% in 2015, all right? 73 of those stocks, about 15%, gained at least 20% last year. Not bad. About half, though, in fact, a little over half, 55% of the stocks, finished the year with a stock price lower than where it started the year. So what does this mean? Well, it doesn't really mean anything other than about half of them were down. And this is where I like, because this is the number that I like to look at, because So many people all over the place, they try to tell you that they're predicting the direction of a stock or a fund or whatever it is based on what it's done, right? Last year, this is one of the top performing, and so we're going to give it 5 stars, Professor Plum, and we're going to recommend that this stock be a buy or whatever it is, or a strong buy, whatever the stupid terminology is. Okay, now.
By that time, maybe the horse is out of the barn. I mean, you don't know.
It could be. So for people who like to look back and say, well, what stocks did well last year? Kind of like picking the teams, right? Which Major League Baseball team did the best? I'm going to bet on them this year. Okay, the top performing individual stock in the S&P 500 in 2015, which, by the way, had a 134% gain last year.
Pretty good gain.
It is. It doesn't matter which stock it is, but...
did they give it?
That, no.
Okay, good.
No. I'm not, and I wouldn't give it anyway. But the one that did the best in 2015, 134% for the year, was ranked number 430 out of 500 stocks in 2014. It lost 7% in 2014.
So it was one of the worst in 2014. Yes. So from a contrarian standpoint, of always go with the worst. No, it doesn't work that
is
way
that
either.
Is that like dogs of the Dow or whatever it is?
Yeah.
I don't know. Well, it lost 7% in 2014, ranked number 430, and it became number one, whatever that stock was, in 2015. Now, along those same lines, the second best performing individual stock in the S&P 500 last year had a 118% gain for the year. That's more than double. I mean, that's pretty good. 118% gain for the year, was ranked number 473 out of 500 in 2014.
In the bottom.
It lost 22%.
Well, it was ripe for a comeback then.
You want one more? The third best performing, I'll just do one more. Third best performing stock in the S&P last year, 92% gain for the year. It had just joined the S&P 500 at the end of August, so it didn't have a ranking in the previous year. All right, so what are we telling us this stuff for, Professor Plum? What does this mean to anybody?
It means it's very difficult to use past performance, especially recent past performance, as an indicator of what's going to happen in the recent, in the upcoming future, the near future.
Well, why is it so many people tell you they can? Why do they sell people $5,000 pieces of
software?
There,
you got it. You got it. Because I can sell you a $5,000 piece of software that feeds on your greed. And that's what it's all about.
And how do I
make money from you?
Right. And it purports to solve the X factor, the unknown. It tells you we know what's going to happen, all based on all these metrics and all of these algorithms that we've put into this very special software. All you got to know is that it's going to turn red when you're supposed to sell, and it's going to turn green when you're supposed to buy.
Red light, green light.
We've heard this over and over. And all they're doing is taking data that we saw. In fact, I would love to see this, and I'm going to try to do this perhaps tomorrow or the next day, Professor Plum. Find out what the predictions were for...
I know we need to look back.
2015. I love to do this because so many people were wrong. They are every year. I can tell you where that right now without even looking at it. The number, I'm going to run across, you know, oil's going to be up around 80, 90 bucks a barrel. That's I'm sure that's got to be in there. The Dow and the S&P are going to continue. I see modest gains, probably 9, 10% somewhere in there.
Well, that's a pretty benign one. I see the ones on oil. Oil's going to 20, guarantee it, stamp it, done. And then the next story is oil's going back to 50, done. It can't go any lower. It's like, well, somebody's going to be wrong. Which one of those experts with great credentials, you know, that seem to know what they're talking about, have really
right.
cool stats and everything, which one's right?
Well, and the thing that always gets me, Professor, is that they're all looking at the same data that everybody else is looking at. How can somebody take the same numbers and interpret them one way and call themselves an expert, while the others on the other side are looking at the exact same numbers and interpreting it another way?
Beauty is in the eye of the beholder.
It must be it. So I guess the overriding question is, if you can't predict the future, and we're saying this over and over, how do you plan? Because you're going to have to plan. That's the whole point of doing all this. So what do you do instead?
Well, we use the one thing that the market does give us, volatility, to our advantage if we have the appropriate time horizon to do that. We also create longer-term time horizons for the unknowns. Now, the one thing that has shown to happen every time so far is, given a long enough time horizon, the market is always moved higher. Now, long enough time horizon, at least 15 years. 1 year, 2 year, 5 year, even 10 year. There have been a few, not many, 10-year periods of time. So time is an ally if you're an investor, and it, as long as you have enough time. So those are what we're trying to achieve. Now, it may be that the next year or two is a wonderful set of years, and then you can always take profits. But what if it's not? What if it continues, like the first day of trading in 2016, and we have a downturn? That's why you want to be buying into the downturn, because we don't know what's going to happen. Time is your friend. Timing is not.
Volatility is what you want as you're building up your
volatility can actually be your friend.
Exactly. Now, it can be your absolute enemy when you're taking money out of your portfolio if you don't have a strategy. We talked about that as well. Okay, 877-PLANNER, that's our number. Lines are open. We'll get some emails when we come back at WealthEd.com. Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum, it's Bucket Strategy Investing. It is Bucket Strategy Investing. Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum, answering your money questions. We wish you a happy new year. 877-PLANNER, our number, PLANNER, 877-752-6637. Some room on the phones right now, so if you have a money question, you can call right now and get back with us. We are live. I think we remembered how to do this, right?
I just am listening to the music.
Okay. All right. A little Chicago
great
for
song.
You. There you go. That's right. You realize how old you have to be to remember when that song was popular, when it was a hit?
Like, I mean, 74, 73?
74, 75, somewhere in there. Yeah. Anyway, we're all getting older. We're all 1 year older as of right now. Okay. 877-PLANNER, our number. If you want to email us, you go to wealthed.com, wealthed.com, and click on the Find Your Answer link. This comes from Peter in Tacoma, Washington. Thank you for your show. We sincerely appreciate the information and service you provide. Well, you're welcome, Peter. We're happy to do it for you. I am age 62 and understand Social Security, the file and suspend strategy is no longer available due to the changes made to Social Security. My wife is age 60. We feel we can wait to age 70 to collect my full benefit with income and longevity factors taken into account. Our question concerns your recommendation for filing for a restricted spousal benefit while I wait to age 70 to collect my full retirement benefit. My wife has worked, but her work history is limited, so she currently will not be eligible for full benefits. She is considering going back to work part-time to add to her work hours. She's only eligible for three-quarter benefits, according to her statement. Any direction you can give us is greatly appreciated. I know I have to apply for restricted spousal benefit before the end of the year if it's a good option for us. Well, obviously
first
this came in, yeah.
Yeah, let's get something. The last statement you said, you know that you have to apply for restricted application before the end of the year? No, that is not it. You had to be 62 mm-hmm. by the end of the year
and
to have the option in the future to file for a restricted application, but you didn't. You weren't even eligible to file for a restricted application. First off, you're not full retirement age. You can't file for a restricted application until your full retirement age. Second issue is you can't file for a restricted application unless the working spouse, your wife in this case, has applied for her benefit, because you can't get a benefit from her until she has her own benefit, which hasn't happened. Now, the one thing that's confusing, though, is I don't know what a three-quarter benefit means.
Well, maybe because she only has a certain number of credits.
Well, you're either eligible or you're not. You either have 40 credits. They don't give you three-quarters of your benefit if you have 30 credits instead of 40.
Well, I think that's what he means. I think what he means is instead of having 40, she's only got 30. Maybe he assumed that that's okay. Three-quarters of full, so she only
gets... Okay, well, that means that she needs 10 more credits, if that's what we're reading in between the lines here.
That was my guess.
So if she needs more credits, she has, well, she's got 4 years to continue working, and then over those 4 years, she'll pick up 16 credits if she's working and making more than roughly $5,000 a year. It's not going to make much of a benefit for her, but it'll give her some amount of benefit, and then you can, when you're 66, you're 62. The reason I said 4 years is because you just turned 62, and you've got 4 years before you can do a restricted application anyway, because you have to be full retirement age to do the restricted application. Two ages here. You have to be at least 62 before the end of 2015, and you have to be at full retirement age to do a restricted application. Anybody who is not full retirement age, must apply for their own benefit first. And anybody who's not 62 by the end of 2015 doesn't have the option anymore anyway. So we need a little clarification on this three quarters. But if your wife does continue working for the next 3-4 years, does put in enough credits to get to her 40 credits, and then does have enough to apply for a benefit, she can apply for a benefit. And then when you're 66, you can apply for a restricted spousal benefit because you were 62 before the end of 2015. You still have that benefit available to you, and you didn't have to do anything other than turn 62 by the end of 2015.
Yeah, but nothing can happen for at least another 4 years or
three and a half, however many years,
whatever it is, until Peter turns age 66. And then they have to make the decision, Professor Plum, does his wife want to actually apply for her benefit at that
right.
time? Because that's the only way that they can do this.
For him to get a benefit at 66 from his wife's work record, she has to have applied. So she has to be receiving a benefit. She will not be able to file and suspend, just like you're not. Neither one of you are old enough to do that anymore. So she'll have to start her benefit, but it's not going to be very much. And you'll get half of her full retirement age benefit. Maybe enough to pay for the Medicare premium.
Yeah. That's
fine, too.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with that at all.
And then leave, because he wants, the reason we're talking about this is because Peter wants to make sure that he waits until 70, because he believes that either he or his wife will live a long time, and make waiting until 70 to take his much larger benefit a good deal. And if they live in their mid to late 80s or longer, either one of them, it's a good deal for him to wait.
Mm-hmm. And want to hammer this home, keep in mind that this applies, the restricted application only applies to people who are already 62 and were as of January 1st.
Right. If you are not 62 while you're hearing this, you don't have a restricted application availability.
Right. So you can discount that. And if you are 62, but you just turned 62, what, like Saturday?
5 days ago? Yeah.
What is today? I don't know. Okay, on the 4th. So if you just turned 62 sometime in 20, if you had a birthday this year.
Last year.
No, if you had one this year.
Well, we have a birthday every year.
And you turned age 62, if you've already had it for this year. And you turn age 62, it's not eligible. You're not eligible.
You had to be 62 right. before the end of 2015 to have the restricted application available to
right.
you.
Right. And if you did, you still got to wait like 4 years or three years, two years, however many years. Yes, however many years you have until
you get to full retirement age and until your spouse has applied for a benefit. You have to have both of those going for you. If you are not full retirement age and your spouse is not receiving a benefit, you cannot receive a spousal
Correct.
Benefit.
Now
ex-spouse is different.
Now, you mentioned file and suspend, just since we mentioned this before.
The ability to file for a benefit and suspend it and still allow somebody else to draw from my work record, for that option to be available, I need to be full retirement age and suspend my benefit before the end of April 2016. So I've got a couple months to turn 66.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to make it. But if you are able to, if you wanted to wait until age 70 to start your own benefit, but you wanted to file for a benefit to allow your spouse to draw off of your work record, if you're going to be full retirement age in the next couple of months, you have that option between now and the end of April. But if you don't turn 66 by the end of April, that means that you cannot voluntarily suspend your benefit by the end of April, which means you will not be able to have the file and suspend availability. Yes, you'll be able to suspend your benefit, but if you suspend, what they did was they changed the definition of things. If you suspend your benefit after April of 2016, you suspend not only your ability to get a benefit, you suspend everybody's ability to get a benefit. Anybody drawing off of your work record will be cut off if you cut your own benefit off.
Yeah, so we should be clear here, too, that the file and suspend was not eliminated. You can file and you can suspend. It's just a question of who can latch on to you at that point. And the question is, after the end of April this year, nobody can. You're certainly welcome to file, and if you want to suspend, you can suspend.
Well, and it helps people that have kids in the house that want to file in an earlier age, 62,
yes.
63, 64, to be able to get money coming in while the kids are in the house and then suspend later and let it grow.
Right.
Yeah. But anybody else? After April, if you suspend it, you suspend everybody's availability.
Yeah, and I suspect that the only people who are really going to use file and suspend from this point on are people who have had for between age 62 and full retirement age, kids or whatever.
They were on disability, whatever the case may be.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, more coming up. Len in Minneapolis, we'll get to your call, but we still have three lines open, so fill them up, 877-PLAN. We're going to take a short break, come back with more of your emails and your phone calls. Johnny Dean and Professor Plum, don't go away. We were talking Social Security a couple of moments ago with Peter's email and some of the rules that are new here for 2016. And you can find out more of those, not just the rules, but also some of the strategies. And believe me, there are a lot of strategies with regard to Social Security. And we talk about them every week, every Tuesday afternoon at WealthEd.com on the Social Security Show with me, Johnny Dean, and Professor Rick Plum. We team up on Tuesdays, 1 o'clock Pacific, 4 o'clock Eastern Time. It's only at WealthEd.com, WealthEd.com. Learn all about Social Security, as much information as we can cram into that half hour that we have. And we also take your phone calls and your emails answering questions. Social Security Show, Tuesdays, 1 Pacific, 4 Eastern, only at WealthEd.com. Our lines are open, 877-PLANNER. Still have two lines open, so grab one while you can. We'll take a couple of calls here before we get to some more emails. I mentioned Len is next up in Minneapolis with a question. Hello, Len.
Hi, Happy New Year to you.
Thank you, and same to you.
Thank you. I want to ask your opinion about something. In 2014, I did a direct rollover from a 401k to an IRA. In January, of course, I got a 1099-R. I reported it on my taxes. Everything's cool.
Okay.
Two weeks ago, I got a corrected 1099-R for 2014 from my trustee.
Okay.
I compared it to my original, and it was exactly the same. So I called the trustee. They researched it. I got an email from them saying it was a system error. They don't know why, but it happened to several different taxpayers.
Okay.
And my question is, and I want to know if my logic is right. They've already submitted the corrected 1099-R to the government.
Right.
When they run that and it shows a zero difference,
yeah,
I don't have to do anything, do I? Do I have to submit an amended return or anything?
No. I mean, there's nothing to amend. The number is exactly the same number. There was a procedural issue. It doesn't affect the taxes that you owe or a refund or anything of that nature in any way, shape, or form. So from your standpoint, it's a non-event.
Excellent. That's what I thought, but I value your opinion.
Yeah, I mean, even if it had realistically been a different number, let's say that you rolled over $100,000 and the 1099 showed $100,000, but the real number was $101,327. So they reissued a new one with the exact right number. The bottom line is 100% of the money went from point A to point B, and in the taxable column, the ending number was zero. That had absolutely no taxable consequence to you in any way, shape, or form. So even at that case, it wouldn't have been an issue.
Great. So I shouldn't expect an audit letter or anything.
Well, I mean, you can, if you do get a letter, don't be too afraid, because it's going to show the zero, you know, change it. You're not going to get a letter. I mean, a zero change in tax liability.
Okay, great. Thank you very, very much, and I appreciate your show.
Thank you, Len.
Thank you, Len. Bye. I appreciate the call. Yeah, I can see that happening someday. You know, get a letter from the IRS. By the way, our records indicate that you owe $0 to us this year, and we're going to start collecting immediately.
I mean, what they're going to do is they're going to match it up and say, okay, here's the 1099 that he has on file. Here's a new 1099, corrected 1099. Does this affect his tax liability in any way, shape, or form? Nope. So why would they send him a letter?
Yeah, now this was an error. I've never heard of that happening, but it's a mistake that I guess occasionally happens. But it was on the part, what, of the IRS?
No, it was on the company.
Or on the company,
IRA custodian. The custodian. The 401k.
Right. And so really the corrections have to happen on that end. But it doesn't. Now, if it had changed his taxes in some way.
But it was 100% rolled over. So
yeah.
Even if it went from $100,000 rollover to $1 million rollover, the amount of taxation is still zero. And the amount that affects your adjusted gross income is zero because it didn't show up in the taxable column. So the only time it would be an issue is if you were taking a straight distribution and it changed your taxable number. And so that would change your tax liability, either more or less. And then you would potentially receive a letter from the IRS saying, hey, you took out more. The corrected 1099 says you took out X dollars more than you did before. Therefore, we're going to tax you on that, you know, that bogey.
Now, he noticed it was exactly the same as 2014 as it was in 2015. So I guess
well, the corrected was the exact same number.
Yeah, yeah. All right.
So what did they correct?
That I don't know. I don't know. Be interesting to get a letter though from the IRS and say,
we have adjusted your tax liability for 2014, and you owe us exactly zero.
That's
and penalties of zero and interest of zero.
Exactly. Yes.
So please remit that as soon as possible.
Please send us a check for and then $0.00. There's got to be some kind of computer program that catches something like that. But honestly, I guess I could see that happening at some point. All right, 877 Planner, our number, PLANNER, 877-752-6637. Just really quickly, we're mentioning some numbers. I think you have some, Professor Plum. We talked about trying to predict the market, trying to use last year's data or anything, any of these predictors to determine whether you should be in the market or whether you should be out of the market, which is a ridiculous thing to do in the first place because the market should be a long-term proposition. And by long-term, I'm talking 10 years minimum, something like that, not in the next 6 months. The old saying of the January effect, you've heard of
as
this.
As January goes, so goes the year.
Right. And there are still a lot of people that I think hang on to that belief. You have some numbers from last year, I guess it was, up to this year regarding January. What are these?
Well, I was looking at the S&P index on its own, and then I was looking at an index fund type. I was just looking at historical values based on from Morningstar, so I'm just looking it up at the same place anybody else could. What did those particular investments do, or those indexes do in January? What did they do for the entire 2015? Both of them were negative for 2015, or for January, and the one with the dividends reinvested was positive for 2015. The one that was just the pure index, no dividends, was slightly. What was it? I actually got to go back and look at that. It was basically break even for the year. So it didn't have a, January was negative in both issues, but it didn't have the predictability effect that the market was going to be down for the whole year.
Yeah, so what does this tell you about trying to use past performance to predict future results?
Well, let's layer in another thing, human behavior. So you looked at January and you said, oh my gosh, as January goes, so goes the year. So you got out at the end of January because the market was down, you know, quite a bit. It was down, I think, 3% in January of last year. So you got out. And then you watched February, March, April, May, June, all positive months, climbing back out of the cellar and showing positive returns. Human nature says, well, I don't believe in that January. I'm getting in January, or in June, July.
Mm-hmm.
And then what happened? August happened. September happened, which were very negative months. And then we're going back and saying, ah, I knew that January effect was right. So then you get out. Wrong time. You got in when it was high. You got out when it was low. And then October and November were really good. And you second guess yourself. You third guess yourself. That's the problem with most people the way they invest. They look at these rules and they use them as rules until they don't fit their purpose. Their greed streak or their fear factor, you know, kick in and say, well, that can't be right. So you get in and get out based on other issues. And so unfortunately, it's not a very good predictor. Might as well go back to looking at what the skirt lengths are. You know.
Well, when I guess people used to wear, you know, when dress lengths, when women wore more dresses, I guess there was the AFL, NFL.
Well, there's that one. We don't know the Super Bowl one yet. We'll see if the winner of the Super Bowl was a former NFL team versus.
I don't even
a
know what it
AFL
was anymore.
Team.
I don't even know if it's supposed to be up or down. It doesn't matter. The point is that none of these predictors with any accuracy work. Problem is that occasionally they are going to be correct.
Well, yeah.
You know, occasionally you're going to see where the January, you know, for a couple of years, maybe January was down. And even though nobody remembers January, you know, in November or December, the market will be down. And so everybody says, well, look, the pattern held true for the last two or three years. So it must be a pattern that works every single time, except for when it doesn't.
It works every time except for when you use it, because you're going to be the exception to every rule, right?
Yeah. So just to repeat again, Professor Plum, what do you do? You can't predict it. So how do you plan?
If you're going to be in a volatile investment, you better have time, a long time. And I don't care whether you're talking about real estate, stocks, or even bonds for that matter. I mean, those are a little bit different animal. Anything that has the potential for doing a better than inflation rate of return has volatility or is very illiquid. And you have to have a longer term time horizon for the principal of that particular investment. So it may do very well in the short run. Keyword there, may, which also means may not. If you want to have a better chance of doing well, the longer time horizon that you have, the better your chance of doing a more reasonable or more historical norm type of return. When we talk about averages, we're not talking about the average over 1 year. We're talking about the average over 10, 15, 20, 30, 40, 50 years. And so to take that average and put it towards a 1 year time horizon doesn't work.
Of course it doesn't work. It's like taking a player's batting average and seeing that he gets a hit 25 times out of 100. So, he's batting 250. Well, he struck out three times. So
he's due.
He's gonna this fourth one on average is gonna get a hit. No, it doesn't work that way. 877 Planner, lines are open. It's Bucket Strategy Investing. It is Bucket Strategy Investing. Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum, 877-PLANNER, 877-752-6637. If you want to get your call in, you just got a couple of minutes to do so before the top of the hour, at which time we will end today's program. But coming up tomorrow, a lot of stuff to talk about, including the whole idea of active versus passive money management. Now, what is that? What are you talking about? Active versus passive money management. Well, there are different ways that a money manager can manage your money, and actively managed money, and then there's passively managed money, which I think you could probably conclude exactly what it is just from the terms. But which one is better? There are those who are only in one camp or the other camp and say it's always better to have passive, or active always beats passive. Well, we're going to give you the scoop on exactly what that means and which one really is better. Is either one really better all the time? Well, the answer is no. So we're going to talk about that. Among other things, anything else you want to mention, 877-PLANNER, any other issues that you have, 877-752-6637, you can give us a call. Trivia for today, moving along for the first piece of trivia for 2016, this from USA Today, Kathleen Casey Kirschling. Oh, there we go. Kathleen Casey Kirschling, the first baby boomer to turn age 62. She was born 1 second after midnight on January 1st, 1946.
And she has a required minimum distribution this year.
She does have one this
year. Her very first one.
That's right. Kathleen, I hope you're listening, and I know you do listen to this program. She turns 70 this year.
She turned 70 a couple days ago.
She was one of the ones who had a birthday just within the last few
days.
A few days, rather. Yeah, so she was born 1 second after midnight. So I guess what? Does that technically make her the first baby boomer? Is that the deal? First boomer?
Well, that's what they're saying. She was born 1 second into
1 second.
The baby boom 1946 generation.
Exactly. So there you go. All right. Kathleen, get on the ball. You got a required minimum distribution, although you don't necessarily have to take it this year.
You could postpone your very first one until the first quarter of next year.
But yes.
What are you waiting for?
Come on. You might as well do it. What? You're going to wait another 16 months to take yours? Probably not. Okay, let's get a couple more emails here. Bob in Meade, Washington. I am subject to the windfall elimination provision with only 26 years of substantial earnings. I want to draw my Social Security soon. Can I continue to work and add years of substantial earnings to eventually eliminate the penalty? If yes, when do they recalculate? Is it every calendar year?
Well, Bob, the answer is yes. If you continue, I'm assuming your full retirement age. Because if you're not full retirement age and you continue to work and make what they consider substantial earnings, you're going to have a problem receiving your benefit. But if you're full retirement age or older, there's no retirement earnings test. Every new year of substantial earnings counts towards the reduction of the windfall elimination provision. Now, that windfall elimination provision, for people that aren't familiar with it, are when you have a pension from work not covered by Social Security, but you also have had other employment where you did pay into Social Security. And if you have more than 20 years, but less than 30 years of substantial earnings, you have less of an impact of the windfall elimination provision. Once you get to 30 years of substantial earnings, there is no impact of the windfall elimination provision. So if you keep working and you keep adding substantial earning years, which right now is about $22,000, $23,000 a year, they'll recalculate it. When will they recalculate it? It's usually about a year and a half after the year or so. For 2015, you're probably going to look towards the end of this year, maybe the beginning part of next year before they recalculate it, because they don't get your information until all the 1099s and everything come out and they can start matching it up. So for the 2015, you would expect an increase in 2017, somewhere in that time horizon for what happened. And what's going to happen is you're going to get two things potentially. You're going to get an increase because your average best 35 years goes up. You're going to get an increase because the formula goes up. So you're going to have a nice little increase. It's not going to make the difference between, you know, living on, you know, caviar and dog food, but it's going to give you a nice little benefit boost away from the, because you're going to get it for a couple of reasons. Like I said, you've got more earnings. That gives you a better benefit. You've got less, better formula because of the windfall elimination being reduced. So it'll happen probably late this year for the earnings that you put on the books in 2015.
Now, will the windfall elimination penalty go away ever through those? I mean, can it be reduced?
Once you get to 30 years of substantial earnings.
So once he hits 30, he's got 4 years, 4 years left.
Right. What they do is they calculate your best 35 years, and they apply a formula. And the formula has a percentage, a couple different percentages. And what they do is they change one of the percentages, and they drop it. And then for every year of substantial earnings from 21, 22, all the way up to 30, they increase that percentage back to the full amount. So when you get back to 30 years of substantial earnings, you're under the original formula for the benefit, you know, the Social Security benefit, no windfall elimination provision.
877-PLANNER, our number, PLANNER, 877-752-6637. We are running out of time, but let's try to get Tony's question in before we have to go for the hour. Tony, how can we help you today?
Hi. I'm going to be filling out the FAFSA for my daughter going to college.
Okay.
And I'm wondering if UTMA is counted as savings for her.
Yes.
And also, we have an annuity, if that's counted as savings for us.
The UGMA or UTMA, Uniform Gift or Uniform Transfer to Minors Act accounts, those are the child's accounts. So it is included as an asset of the child. An annuity in your name is a retirement account, basically. And the FAFSA, the Free Application for Student Aid, does not look at the annuities. Now, there are some private schools that will look at that. So the private schools, if you're applying to non-state-sponsored schools, many of the private schools will look at the annuities and look at home equity and other things. But the federal government doesn't when they look at the annuity, whether it's an IRA annuity or non-qualified.
Okay, great. I never could tell, so I appreciate the information.
Okay, Tony, thank you very much for the call.
Good luck to your daughter in college, too. And, good luck to you for having to pay for it.
Yeah. That's right. All right, take care. The FAFSA, the application for student aid or free, I forget what the
free application for student aid.
There are certain things that people look at. The UTMA, as you said,
it's an asset of the child.
It is an asset of the child.
What the UTMA is all about is children under the age of 18 technically are not allowed to own money because they can't make decisions on their own behalf. So there has to be
legally
a custodian or a guardian of the money. That's usually the parent. But it is still the child's money.
Exactly. And that's something else you should keep in mind if you're setting up a UTMA. That's a whole other discussion. If you need the brain trust off the air, you can talk to Professor Plummer. Any of the nationwide members of Lucia Capital Group has 800-644-1150. 800-644-1150. That's all the time we have for today. For Professor Rick Plum, I'm Johnny Dean. This is Bucket Strategy Investing.
Information presented should not be considered specific tax, legal, or investment advice. You should always seek counsel of the appropriate advisor prior to making any investment decision. All investments are subject to risk, including the loss of principal. There is no guarantee that any investing or financial planning strategy will be profitable, provide protection from loss, or meet its stated objectives. Investment advisor representatives of Lucia Capital Group are also registered representatives of and offer securities through Lucia Securities, LLC, a registered broker-dealer member FINRA SIPC. John Dean is an associated person with Lucia Securities, LLC. In the information presented, says the opinions and views expressed are subject to change without notice and may not come to pass. Registration with the SEC does not imply a certain level of skill or training.